Hello and welcome to another fantastic episode of Couch Potato Theater here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast on the FPN dedicated to covering all those hidden gems, cult classics, and guilty pleasures that are just so good that even though you may have that Criterion collection or that deluxe Blu-ray set in your library just mere inches away from your entertainment center, you love what you're watching so much on the TV, you don't even care about getting up and getting off the couch. And that, my friends, is the definition of what our show is all about. I am Davis Grayson, your host of Couch Potato Theater. And for this show, I am actually going to be heading into the future. And I have brought with me one crew member of the Phantom Podcast Network, and it is the co-founder, Kyle Wagner. Kyle, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing well. It's good to be back on the couch. I'm looking forward to tonight's movie. I got the popcorn ready. I got the drink. I'm just ready to kick back and explore what I consider one of the more interesting films in Disney history.
Absolutely. Because this film, you know, when I was actually talking to a lot of friends, coworkers, and even fellow podcasters to ask to say if they'd like to be on the show tonight, 95% of them said, "What movie is that? What is this?"
Yeah, and you know, for me, I think this movie stands out because even when this movie came out, a lot of people weren't exposed to it until a few years later because it kind of got a little bit of a second life for whatever reason. Maybe because of the toy line and things like that. But I remember seeing this. I think it was more because of the video release, the VHS release, because it was one of the first movies that came out on VHS. And, you know, I guess, Davis, before we get any further, we should take that trip through and tell the people exactly what film we're going to be discussing and doing and sitting on the couch and watching this evening.
So tonight, everyone, we're actually not only going to be doing a retrospective and a commentary as we sit on this couch potato, or couch, I just said, should say. We're going to be talking about the infamous movie known as The Black Hole.
Absolutely. Now, Davis, I have to be honest. I've always had a soft spot for this movie. I know a lot of people kind of it's only got about a 43% on Rotten Tomatoes as far as freshness goes. A lot of people kind of ding it because they say, oh, it was Disney trying to cash in on the whole Star Wars craze. And yes, there's a lot of that in that. But one, I think with this movie, and yes, I'll be the first to admit, the storyline of this movie, especially the end of it, is very convoluted. It's a little bit confusing. But I was a fan of the robot designs of this movie. Davis?
Yeah, absolutely, because when I first saw this movie, I absolutely loved it, because it was released in December 21st, 1979, and it was the year before, actually by about 5 months, 6 months before, you know, the second chapter of the Star Wars trilogy was going to be released, which is known as Empire Strikes Back. So, and this was actually one of, if not the first Disney movie that was science fiction.
Yeah, this kind of started. This was one of those. This is interesting because the 70s were a really interesting time for Disney because. And correct me if I'm wrong, Davis, and you're going to know a little better than I will, but the 70s were really about the live action product for Disney, wasn't it? They didn't have a lot of animated films come out in the 70s.
Yeah, I think it was more animated because I think during that time it was.
Didn't you have like the Love Bug movies, Escape from Witch Mountain?
Yes, Escape from Witch Mountain. Also, was the Apple Dumpling Gang during that same time too?
It might have been more early 70s for the Apple Dumpling Gang, but that was kind of. That was right in the heart of what I could consider. You had a lot of the Jodie Foster Disney movies at that time, Candleshoe, yeah. Things like that. And I kind of always, if I remember right, kind of the last movie of that live action run for Disney. And you can tell me if I'm wrong too. And it was kind of another movie that was definitely different from what Disney was doing at the time. And that was Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that movie, but it was one of those different ones that was unique, but you're thinking your time. I don't know if they were just trying to push the limits on what was actually transpiring at the time, or if they just didn't have any animation ideas at the time. I don't really know, but you know, this is the Black Hole is one of the first few movies that actually wanted to help develop Touchstone.
Yeah,
because of just the content itself.
Yeah, and you know, I think when I think back to this time frame for Disney with Disney and sci-fi, I've always put this movie and the original Tron kind of together in the same boat.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, because if you think about it, it was released in 1979. And if I remember correctly, Disney tried to actually reach out to ILM at the time for the special effects for the ships and everything, but they were too involved with a certain movie known as Empire Strikes Back. So just imagining how much better the special effects would have been if ILM would have had reign over it for a while.
Yeah, I agree. Now, we talked about this. This movie came out December 21st, 1979. About a $20 million budget for this film. And when you consider the effects at the time, to me, that seems like it's a high budget for this level of movie at the time, Davis.
Yeah, you know, one would have to wonder what was actually going on or what was actually in the mindset, because the box office gross was $35 million. So, I mean, they only did $15 million over what they budgeted. However, it was the 13th highest grossing film of that year. So,
yeah,
and
it was one of Disney, it was a PG rating. And I almost wonder today, when you think about a couple of scenes in that movie, it may have probably been a PG-13 rated movie if that had existed at the time.
Yeah, it was a very, some scenes in that movie, you have to go, it's dark. Even certain scenes we might be talking about, or even the ending, you go, oh, this is a Disney movie?
Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing about the Black Hole is I know, especially in the last maybe about 10 years, there's been a lot of talk of maybe doing a remake of it and things like that. But in 2014... Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is basically the godfather of science right now, said it was one of the least scientifically accurate movies of all time, Davis. Now, I know enough about science. I'm a bit of a space nut. When I was younger, I went to space, the U.S. Space Academy. You know, I live here in Florida, not far from you. And, you know, we got Kennedy Space Center. You know, always been interested in that. And even I have to say, it's been a while since I've watched this film, but watching it as I got older, I'm like, yeah, the physics of this movie, what we know about black holes, just don't apply right anymore.
Yeah, I could see that. But also at the same time, I don't think it was actually meant for, you know, adults. I think it was meant for a younger, and not to actually worry about it. I mean, because I know, like, there's one scene where they supposedly are supposed to have spacesuits on, but because of budget constraints, they just said, don't worry about it. So I don't know if it was just a suspension of disbelief where they were just like, oh, let's just not worry about that and let's just keep going with that. Or, I mean, or if it's just might be they know a little bit more about wormholes, or it should have been a black hole, and it should have been called a wormhole. Who knows? I mean, but overall, I mean, if you think about the story and the plot line, which basically, we'll go ahead and share with you the plot of it, of the storyline, is the story opens in the year 2130 as the USS Palomino has finished their deep space exploration mission and on a course for home. However, they discover the black hole with the USS Cygnus in station near the event horizon with a mysterious gravity field surrounding the ship. Curious as most humans are, they venture closer to discover that the dormant ship becomes alive and invites them to land. What they discover changes their lives forever.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think about, too, when we think about at the time, I think we've learned so much more about black hole science from when this movie came out. Black holes were still something of a mystery at that point, and they still are, but we still know a lot more now than we did back in 1979. So I think one of the things that this movie really played on was the mystery of the black hole. And you talked about it being for younger kids. I agree to a point, but this movie had a lot of very mature themes in it.
That's true. It did. And I don't know, maybe I should take back maybe it was supposed to be intended for the entire family, but you are right. There are some scenes where you go, oh, I don't know if we can handle this or not. But I mean, if you just listen into the plot description itself right now, it's talking about trying to discover human life. You know, they finished their deep exploration and they haven't found anybody.
Yeah. Which has always been kind of one of fascinating things to me. The other thing I've kind of found with this movie that I always found fascinating was here we have the Palomino. And when they find this Cygnus, the technology difference between these two ships, with one ship actually being built and sent out well before the other, was mind-blowing to me. I'm like, you would think the ship, the Palomino, would have been a lot more advanced than what it was.
Oh, I mean, if you look at it, and then the ship of that size and the Palomino lands inside it.
Yeah. So and that was something that always kind of threw me with this film. But
unless the Cygnus was actually a heavier cruiser or whatever the case may be, I mean, it was a huge ship to begin with, and the Palomino was actually just on a, I mean, it says a deep space exploration, but you almost think it was a scout ship of some type.
Yeah. Now I will say this, for the time, this movie actually had quite the cast in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. It had Maximilian Schell, Robert Forster, Joseph Bottoms, Yvette, I can never say her last name right, Mew Show. Yes. Anthony Perkins, Ernest Borgnine, and not credited, but Roddy McDowall and Slim Pickens.
Yeah, of course, and they were Vincent and Bob,
right.
The two droids. Yeah, I mean, this had, and Gary Nelson, who directed it, he also did Freaky Friday. He did the Alan Quartermain TV show, also did the movie Get Smart. And so there was a good casting around this and some very strong actors involved. Now, Davis, I don't remember seeing The Black Hole in the theater. I was probably 79, I'm probably 4 or 5 at the time. My first time primarily seeing The Black Hole was on VHS tape. I want to say it was maybe about 82, 83 when VHS was first coming out, because it was one of the first things Disney put out onto VHS.
You know, that was probably my first time viewing it as well on VHS, because I never saw that in the theater whatsoever. The first time I saw it, though, I thought it was just really cool. And yeah. I think we were talking about before we started recording, you know, I think we both got the Disney read-along, which had only half, was it 3/4 of the cast? Not everybody was included with that. And then there was a comic book series, and there was even the, it was Alan Dean Foster who actually wrote the novel.
Yeah, I believe so, which I've never read. And I'm a big Alan Dean Foster fan. So that's kind of on my list to go back and explore that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, if I look at this as a movie that could have been, it was a good movie to me, but I think it could have been an amazing movie if the right pieces would have fit, because they have an all-star cast right here.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a little bit of minor stuff that did not achieve the greatness, which I think they were hoping for.
Yeah. Well, I think with this movie, there was a lot of really good ideas in place and things that to me were standout, but there was a lot of things where it just felt like they were just reaching a little too much. And you know, Davis, is like I look back at this film now, I'd almost rather see it played as more of a psychological thriller than a true maybe something along the lines of, I don't know if as quality of a movie, this is a good comparison. But that, did you ever see the movie Pandora?
No, I never did.
Ben Foster, a couple other people. But it was a sci-fi, but it kind of had that keep you on the edge of your seat thing going, where you were kind of wondering what was going on. And I think this movie kind of falls into that place, especially when you're talking about the mystery of what happened to the crew, you know, all those kind of things. I think if you were to remake it, it would be a little bit more of a psychological thriller. I think you could probably get a little more play out of it.
Now, let's step out in the left field for a minute, and I want you to think about this movie and then compare it to The Black Hole and see how much further this movie I'm about to say went, where it could have had some of the same storyline as The Black Hole.
Okay.
Event Horizon.
You know what? I was thinking that same thing. Event Horizon probably matches better a description of what I'm talking about. It played up a little more on the horror and the fear angle, but I think if you were to mix some of the sci-fi elements into that, you'd have... But that's the direction you need to go if you're going to remake The Black Hole. And I think that's where if they could have done that at the time with this film, I think this film stands out a lot more than what it does today.
Yeah, and you know what? I think this, if people were to give the chance to watch this film and just to see what we see, I think they would appreciate it a lot more. I don't think, because the 30th anniversary came and went, and the 40th anniversary is only 2 years away. And to this day, it has never been released on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But if you...
Now, I know on ahead. iTunes, they do have it on an HD format.
Yes. Yes, they do. And it's funny, because when we talk about like the merchandise or just even the soundtrack to that, it was composed by John Barry, not the country music singer, but the composer. And he starts off, it's one of the final movies, I want to say, that had a was it a prologue?
Yeah,
it was like a 2-minute prologue, and when you hear it, it's just so uplifting, so positive.
Yeah,
I mean, just highly animated.
Yeah, you get so pulled into that opening music scene, and but it's black screen, and you're like, what's going on here?
What's happening?
Yeah. But now, Davis, we can't talk about The Black Hole without talking about the ending of the film, because I think this is where a lot of people get turned off by this film.
All right. I want to hear your perspective first on the ending.
Well, for those of you who may not have seen the film or you're interested in it, spoiler warning, spoiler alert, but at the end of The Black Hole, the surviving member of people of the Palmino get onto what was a scout ship that they were sending into the black hole to get information. They get in it, they go into the black hole, and it's like the interpretation I've always taken from it, Davis, is like they went through the gates of heaven. You see like an angel there, because and then the following shot is, of course, the quote-unquote villain of the film, Dr. Hans Reinhardt, inside the Maximilian cyborg, burning what appears to be burning in hell. And then the end shot is the scout ship flying out of the black hole to who knows where.
Yeah, I would think we're about on the same lines. I always thought that after watching it when I was a kid, and then having no idea, and then watching it more as an adult, I'm going, they flew through hell and heaven, and they got to the other side. And of course, you know, in the novel, it's a little bit different ending. The audiobook, the read-along book from Lake Buena Vista Records that we have, has a different ending. And the comic book adaption has, I mean, it's similar endings, but they're just a little bit tweaked a little bit, because at the read-along book, it actually has the captain, which Dan Holland, who says, let's see what's out there. And they go exploring. And I think that there was a comic book that was released after the novel, the movie adaption. There was a few more issues. And I think it was talking about when they went to an alternate universe or something along those lines, where they got to meet alternate versions of other people and different stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that's part of one of the problems that they've had with this film, is because we had those different endings. And I think so many people were confused by the end of the black hole, and that they felt like, well, we had this kind of fun sci-fi romp with this very confusing ending, and that it didn't feel like you had any closure to it.
Oh, yeah, I know. And one would have to wonder if they were just trying to make a happy ending, or what. I mean, if they had just gone through the black hole or wormhole, however you want to say it, they went through the black hole and, you know, they come out on the other side and they seem to be okay. But, you know, you have to wonder what was the whole purpose behind that. You know, were they having just dreams? Was it a psychological thriller? I mean, psychological episode that they were all having at the same time, or what was actually happening? Or did they see what they could have seen? Because, you know, at the very end, we'll talk about this at the movie, but they actually see a light and they start falling toward that light, and they go through, like you said, the gates of heaven, and they come out on the other side of the black hole. So it's an interesting ending, and it's a good movie. I really, really like it. I mean, it talks about all the things that we have as humans. I mean, they're exploring, they're trying to find other civilizations, other life. They can't find anybody, they're discouraged, and all of a sudden they find a missing ship. I mean, what humans would not want to go, oh my gosh, we found this, we need to see what happens? We're always like that. We're always that curious.
Now, let me ask you this, because one of my favorite things with this film was I was actually a fan of the droid designs. Vincent, Bob, you had the security droids, and of course you had Maximilian. The other thing, I was always just partial to the laser pistols they used in this film. The barrel on the top and the barrel on the bottom.
Oh, I know. It that was one of the coolest things that you know you could have. And it was funny. There was if anyone else is listening, on from Trek FM's From There to Here, there was an episode that I was actually on that. Do you remember the episode where the Dauntless appeared?
Yes, yes.
And it was Arcturus who actually, you know, designed the ship, because he wanted to take out Voyager and get him back to the Borg. And at the very ending, he's got a pistol, and it looks like the pistol from the black hole, from the Cygnus crew.
Yeah. Now I will say, two of my favorite all-time blaster designs were the blasters from the black hole, and I was always a fan of the hand pistol from V.
Yeah, that was actually cool. I know whenever I was a kid, I'd always have something because I always loved Charlie. He was my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think everybody loved Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie Pizer. He was the best. And always try to find something or use your hands a certain way for you look like you have the double blasted guns and blaster guns. So that was always pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I always did find interesting in this film that it gets played up at a couple of times was Yvette Mimenu's character of Dr. Kate McCrae. And the fact that they basically portrayed her as having some kind of psychic link with Vincent.
Yeah, you know, you have to wonder why they opened that plot. It was, I don't know if it was like a plot B or something to along those lines, where you're going, oh, by the way, they also have this psychic link, but we're not going to delve too much into it. We're just going to give you a little hint about what's going on. But I mean, it was actually cool. But I'm just thinking in my mind, going, how does this work? What's going on? I mean, the whole crew was just like, oh yeah, they got a psychic link with each other. No big deal.
Yeah, it's like there was nothing to it. And I guess but you think about it at the time, it's probably, especially when you look at sci-fi films at that time, they probably just didn't think, oh okay, we don't need to explain this. I think, you know, that's where we've evolved as fans of science fiction, is we want more of those answers of why something is like that. Back in those days, we didn't necessarily need that big explanation.
Yeah, we really don't. And, you know, in some ways, when you watch this movie, if you just go in thinking, not worrying about questions, how does this happen or anything. I mean, even the simple fact of when they're actually trying to identify what the Cygnus is, if that is the actual Cygnus, you see other pictures or images of different ships, and you see these humongous ships, and you're going, is this a pre-Federation? What is this whole backstory of how Earth is now? And we don't know. We don't know really too much about it. It's just some of the things, it's just really cool just to watch and enjoy it. I mean, and that's exactly what I did. I introduced the black hole to a few friends, and I said, look, I know it was made in the 1970s. I said, but don't focus on that. Just focus on the story. Focus on the character development, and then see where it goes from there. So, and I had people who enjoyed it.
Yeah, after that, I think it's one of those films that I have no problem going back and watching every now and then. I don't know if it could be something I'd watch on a, you know, regular rotation basis, but mm-hmm. I think it's also one of those films because it's one of those Disney films that doesn't get a ton of play. You don't see the black hole on cable. You don't see a lot of replay of it on even some of the Disney things. I think it kind of got a lot of airtime late 80s, maybe even early 90s. You saw it a few times, but it's disappeared. It's become kind of almost one of those forgotten Disney movies, which I think a lot of the films that Disney did around that time have been kind of forgotten. You know, we had the remake of Escape to Witch Mountain with The Rock and Carla Gugino, so that movie kind of, that series got a little bit of play for a bit, but I think a lot of that stuff that was done in that time frame is kind of a forgotten Disney area.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's some movies, and I think this actually helped Tron as well to be made, because they saw what they could do and said, let's try this and let's do something different with that. But, I mean, I still wonder to this day, if anyone is just too afraid to remake this movie or to reimagine it. Because, I mean, if you look at Tron Legacy, there was a book of the black hole right there in the bedroom. So one would have to just wonder if somebody is just going, yeah, we want to make this, but we have to do it just right, or we have to do it justice, or something along those lines.
You bring up Tron Legacy, and I think that brings up to a good point too, because I think the average success of Tron Legacy kind of did hurt the attempts to redo the black hole.
Yeah.
Tron Legacy got a huge push, a lot of marketing, a lot of money thrown into it, and it didn't bomb at the box office, but I wouldn't call it a successful box office film either. I think it's one of those films that probably has picked up more on DVD and Blu-ray, you know, especially with the cult of Jeff Bridges and things like that. I think in today's world, if you're going to, first of all, if we do Black Hole, I think it has to be a remake. It's too long gone to do a sequel at this point. I think you have to do a remake, but I think we're at a position where we have people who can do a remake and do it well. I think the question will be is, and Davis just took a little turning into a black hole there, but the question will be is, how far is Disney willing to push the envelope for a black hole film?
Yeah, I mean, because 1979 standards, it was a pretty dark film.
Oh, it's very time. Dark. And I mean, and let's get into it. For a PG movie, it had a couple of very violent deaths in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies where you're thinking in your mind going, how far can they go? And there's one you don't even expect it happening, and it just happens towards the climax of the movie.
Yeah, and that it's a very violent death that I think in today's day and age we would see a lot more gruesome of it, but still, even for that time, that was a violent death.
And we're not going to spoil anyone with the death because we want everyone to be surprised when they watch it with us with the commentary. But that certain death, it's pretty intense. And overall, I mean, if you think, let's see, there's other parts of the movie where you're thinking, your mind going, what is this really happening? There's a secret behind it, much less how we discover what happened to the crew.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I did like about the Black Hole was the mystery behind it. I think the mystery as far as what happened to the crew, I think that's something that did keep you engaged in that film more than you would have if you would have known what was going on with that film. Now, I think when you look back on it too, Davis, one of the reasons why I think the Black Hole hasn't been explored more was Disney merchandised the Black Hole pretty heavy at the time for 79, including the Mego 4-inch figure line. Now, I remember the TV ad for those figures.
And, you know, for the time, they weren't that bad of figures. They were 4-inch figures. They were articulated at the arms and knees. And there was, let's see, how many was it? There was actually a 4-inch figure line and a playset. And if I remember correctly, there was supposed to have a Palomino playset. And it was actually pictured at a toy fair.
Yeah,
and for some reason or another, it did not get released.
Yeah, what I'm looking at is some of the stuff here. Now, there's a radio-controlled Vincent. There's a walkie-talkie set. They actually did have a Palomino, and they also had basically what was a bridge set as well. Now, I always thought one of the things the one figure I always wanted was the Vincent figure. I'm looking at it now. They did Vincent, Bob, Maximilian, basically the main cast of the Palomino. You had Captain Holland, Charlie Fizer, Kate McRae. You had the Star security robot, the humanoid, a regular robot sentry, Dr. Reinhardt, Durant, Booth. Now, I just thought that the droid figures look pretty cool. Now, the regular figures, you know, they were basically, at the time, the same cut-and-dry Mego things. The Maximilian figure was a little weak.
And, you know, that's the one figure I still have. I still have that figure. And you know what? It was just a cool figure. I mean, and the downside to that figure, he was just a statue. He did not have any articulated arms to him or anything of that sort, much like how Bob and Vincent had their legs could actually come down from their body.
Yeah, and but, then they also did a line of 12-inch figures as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Palomino, which was, I think it held two or three figures, but it was canceled.
Yeah. I think at that time it was pretty much the end of the line, and they realized, okay, this isn't going to go that far. But you know, I think what it comes down to with this particular movie is all the good intent was there, and there were so many good ideas, and they just never fully realized the execution of it. And then you throw in the convoluted ending of this film, and what could have been a great sci-fi romp was turned more into, I don't know if I can even use the word cult classic with the Black Hole, because I think it's more of a forgotten film at this point.
Yeah, it really is, because like you said, like we talked about, we were trying to actually find people to see if they wanted to watch it, and they're like, What's the Black Hole? I don't know what you're talking about. Even I have friends who are diehard Disney fans, and I said, this is what I'm going to be focusing on tonight. They're like, I've never heard of this movie. I was like, it's a Disney movie. They're like, still doesn't ring a bell. I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking because it's a really – I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie.
Now, yeah, I agree with you. I think it was a very good movie. Again, I think it's a lost era of Disney.
Yeah, and I think some movies, it's just going to happen that way unless you actually have people who say, you know what, why hasn't this movie been released? You know, I want to see this movie and everything. So on a completely topic of the merchandise, if you look at that Cygnus Bridge, it looks a lot like the Enterprise Bridge from Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh, I agree. I agree completely. So now let's talk about if they were to remake the film now, because I think you and I both agree a remake is more in line than a sequel at this point.
Yes.
Who are some of the people you could see in some of these roles?
Oh, who could actually do this? Now that we could actually just let's run it down. Dr. Heinz Reinhardt. Who could you see right now doing that?
I got a couple of suggestions. Anthony Hopkins comes to mind.
Yes.
And if you want to think a little out of the box, what about Liam Neeson?
Ooh. I was thinking him or Victor Garber.
Victor Garber would be very good as well. Now I got one to throw at you for our captain, Dan Holland.
Okay.
Ben Affleck.
Yes, I can actually see that. I could see him doing a very good job with that. All right, so what about Charlie Pizer?
Now, this is a tough one because I think you have to go with kind of a young, up-and-coming actor. Because Charlie was kind of the cowboy of the outfit.
Yes.
I'll throw this out there. Our new young Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see him being that way. Or would you want someone who, not necessarily young in age, but young at heart? Or maybe someone who still has boyish charms, so to speak? Or, you know, we could actually just turn it into a Danny Holland. I'm sorry, Charlie Pizer with an I, and actually let it be a girl.
Yeah, that's true too. I got another person for you, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but he's the new MacGyver.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
And he played Havoc in the X-Men First Class film.
Okay, yeah, I know who he is now.
I'm drawing a blank on his name. He's got that movie Monster Trucks that's getting ready to open here soon for kids, but he might be a good fit for the Charlie Pizer role as well.
Yeah, I could see that. So what about Dr. Kate McCrae?
I think you have to go with a little bit mature actress in this, so you can't go with like a younger, you know, Anna Kendrick or something like that, because Kate McCrae was a little older in this film.
Yeah, and I think that is one of her last movies.
Yeah, she kind of disappeared from the spotlight. I'm not real sure who. What, do you have a suggestion on this, Davis?
No, not right offhand, Beast, because it's one of those things when you look at her, you're going, oh, you know, she's a little bit older, but she still looks great.
Maybe Kate Beckinsale?
You know, that actually might work right there. Somebody who... No, I know. Perfect. Claudia Black.
Yeah, Claudia Black would be very good in that role as well.
Yes, that would be the one I would want to do. Now, before we do Dr. Alex Durant, who could you see Harry Booth?
There's a lot. I think Harry Booth, you almost go with one of these popular character actors.
Yeah.
That's out there. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. He's done a lot of work. I'm drawing a blank. Do you have a thought on that, Davis?
I was, you know, some... If you look at how some of them are, it could be because Ernest Borgnine was a pretty popular actor even at that time. So maybe someone like Tom Hanks or let's see, somebody along, you know, somebody who, you know, still has that carefree attitude about it. But
I've got a name for you. And I was talking about a character actor. Are you familiar with Kevin Dunn?
No.
Okay, well, he's been in a lot of things. He's one of those people, you know him when you see him. Did you ever see the movie Unstoppable with Denzel Washington and Chris Pine?
Yes.
He was the representative for the train company.
Okay.
He was also in a couple of the Shia LaBeouf's dad in the Transformer films.
Ah, got you. I know exactly who that is now.
I think he'd be a good fit for that role. Now, the Anthony Hopkins role.
Anthony Perkins?
It's Anthony Perkins role. That's a tough one. That's a tough one to me.
I'm just going to put it out there. Idris Elba.
I can almost see him more in the Dan Holland role.
Yeah, I could see that too.
And, another person I could see in the Charlie Pizer role, Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, I could see that. What about Timothy O'Munson? He played on Psych. He was Carlton Lassiter.
Yeah.
As Dr. Alex Durant.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that definitely. Now what about the voices of our favorite robots? Who would you like to favorite droids in this case?
Oh. You know, I'd like to see James Arnold Taylor as one of them.
I think James Arnold Taylor as Vincent would be outstanding.
Yeah, I think so too. For Bob, I don't know right offhand.
Yeah, that one would take a little work on Bob, but I'm sure they could find somebody. But I think what it boils down to is, again, this: if they ever do anything with the black hole, it has to be a remake, and maybe you can spin out a, if it does well, spin out a sequel from that.
Yeah, and you know, above all else, you could actually put this on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, and we've talked about this some on Culture Clash and a few other things. The Netflix model, what's going on with Netflix right now is opening up so much, and with Disney's new relationship with Netflix, anything is possible. So you just don't know. But, you know, I look back, I'm looking forward to doing the commentary on this one, because it's actually been a little bit since I've watched this film. But I look at this, and I do think this movie does have a very interesting place in sci-fi history.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And, you know, I haven't watched the movie in a while either, so it's going to be almost like a first time for both of us watching it together. So it's one of those movies where, you know, you want to discover what happens. And, you know, even like we talked about, the whole story itself, it's a great story. It's just at the end, it just gets a little bit too much convoluted.
Yeah. Now, I would definitely recommend it to somebody now with what you had said earlier, is you've just got to go in and take it for what it is. If you go in looking to overanalyze it, you're not going to enjoy yourself. But you've got to take this as it has that 70s science fiction feel. It's got some elements of Star Wars, which was intentional at the time. And you just take it for what it is and you absorb it. And if you do that, I think you come and say, well, I could enjoy that. I can see where the flaws are. But I come out of this thinking, yeah, I don't feel like I've wasted the last hour and a half of my life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what you think on some parts of the movie we haven't actually delved into yet. So that'll be next time on the second part of The Black Hole. So, you want to talk about, you have any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Just, I'm looking forward to this commentary. I think this film is unique. I think I would like to see it kind of get out there again, to at least maybe see enough interest to see somebody take an attempt to do a legitimate remake on it, because the potential is there for something good. So, you know, go check this movie out. If you even think that you like it enough to encourage a remake or something, let people know, because that's the only way something like this is going to get done, and there's so much potential in this film.
I completely agree with you, because in 2 years' time, 2019 will be the 40th anniversary of the Black Hole, and we have yet to see a Blu-ray release, any special features behind it. I would love, I know Robert Forster, he's mm-hmm. still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's in Last Man Standing.
Yeah.
The TV show with Tim Allen. And, you know, I would love to hear what their thoughts on it. They're probably like, I don't remember this movie. But just to hear what some of the reasons behind it, because it could – I really enjoyed it, but I know it could have been an amazing movie if they would have had some of the right parts at the very end. So, but I will tell you this, a little bit of trivia for me is – because you know I'm all about the toy collecting and everything. Uh-huh. One of my holy grail is Vincent. And it is a Mediacom. It was released over in Japan. And it was a Disney. For some reason or another, Mediacom had released these figures. And it was Bob, Vincent, Maximilian. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was Kubrick. And they were in blind box packages, and it's the character itself. But every time I've tried to find this Vincent character on eBay or whatnot, it's always $100 or more. Someplace I even saw it for like $250, and I'm like, you know, as much as I would love to have this figure, I cannot justify spending that.
Yeah, no, I agree, but you know what? There were that, and that's the thing. There was some very cool merchandise with this film, and I won't deny that at all. There was some very fun and cool merchandise. But you know what, Davis? We got a lot of exciting stuff going on around the FPNet these days.
Absolutely. So, what's going on with the Culture Clash? What's happening?
Culture Clash, our flagship show, hosted by myself and my partner Kevin Reitzel, we're always constantly trying to bring you the latest in pop culture news, things going on, what we've seen, what we haven't, you know, keep you updated. We've also got the Phantom Flashback, and the most recent flashback we did were the films of 1986, which, Davis, I know you took a part in that. We had a blast doing that.
We did, and I think we also decided that a sequel is due for 1987's films.
Absolutely, and that is definitely going to be a project that's going to be happening sooner than later, as well as a project I'm working on for the flashback, and that's revisiting the kind of lost hits of the 1980s. You know, there's always those 80s shows that we all remember. Knight Rider, Airwolf, Dallas, you know, things along those lines. But the 80s had a lot of shows that have a little bit of a cult following, but we've just forgotten about over the years, you know, things, something, or even those movies, shows we kind of just laugh at a little bit at the concept now. You know, I'm talking about stuff like Street Hawk, Manimal, Auto Man, you know, Misfits of Science, things like that. You know, so we're gonna bring back some memories of those types of shows. Now, of course, yes, Davis.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, that just sounds like so much fun. It will either determine if it's either a guilty pleasure or if it's a cult classic.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, too, we have Kevin Reitzel and Norman C. Lau running things like butter over at Blood of Kings, bringing you all the way in Highlander, talking about going the history of Highlander, going through everything that is Highlander. And, you know, we've just celebrated the 30th anniversary. Next year is the 25th anniversary of the TV show. There's a lot of interest. We're rolling on getting the remake of the original film with the director John Wick now in charge of that film. So a lot of good and fun things going on at Blood of Kings, which, you know, that's one of those shows that's the heartbeat of the Phantom Podcast Network and something we're all about. Now, we also have the Spotlight specials. You know, we take maybe a movie, or if we've got a really important thing going on. We just recently did our Rogue One special. We also, of course, had a sad time where we did our reflecting back on our memories and love of Carrie Fisher, who had passed away right before the Christmas holidays. And we just all wanted to make sure we got our time in. And I got to thank Matt Clifton and Michael Morse from Cloud City Casino for jumping in on that podcast And bringing their thoughts into that as well. But we've got some exciting things. We're in a new year for 2017. We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the Phantom Podcast Network. We've got some very fun, besides Black Hole, Couch Potato Theater things coming up. We might be hitting another sci-fi Disney film here very shortly as well. You never know what might be on the grid. I'll just put it that way.
Yes, end of line, so to speak.
So, and of course, you can find all of the great shows on the Phantom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for your Android devices. You can find us on Facebook at the Phantom Podcast Network. We have a page. We also have a group page. We invite you to join that. You can email us at phantompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We want and we need your input. We want to know what you want to listen to. We want to know if you like what we're doing. You know, leave those reviews on iTunes. So those are always a big help to us. You can follow us on Twitter at FanPodNetwork. You can find me on the Twitter at AKyleW. Where can they find you on the Twitter, Davis?
They can find me at Davis Grayson on the Twitter.
Absolutely. And if you want to reach out to those guys over at Blood of Kings, because you've got some Highlander love, you can email them at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com or find them on the Twitter at bloodofkingspod. Now, one thing I will say about the Black Hole, too, Davis, there were some great lines in the Black Hole.
Yes, there was.
And one of my favorites was Vincent. And I loved it. I always loved this quote. And that was, a wolf remains a wolf, even if it has not eaten your sheep.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about Charlie Pizer, who had the boyish charms, who I think everyone loved and wanted to be Charlie Pizer. One of his best lines, when I volunteered for this mission, I never thought I'd end up playing straight man to a tin can.
Well, Davis, with that, I think we got just everybody. We hope you enjoyed this look back on it. And we've got a commentary coming for you. Davis is in charge. Have you got the popcorn and the drinks ready, Davis?
Oh, all you got to do is just hit the popcorn button on the microwave. We'll be ready to go very, very soon.
Sounds good. I want to thank everybody for listening. And, of course, I'm going to let our good host, Davis Grayson, take us out.
All right. So, without further ado, I will quote the words of Dr. Heinz Reinhardt. The word impossible, Mr. Booth, is only found in the dictionary of fools. And on that note, have a wonderful night.